Hey, what's going on? Welcome back. This is episode 9 of the Philadelphia Eagles Talk. I'm your host, Kevin Woodman, and today I'm going to be going over some of the coaching rumors. The Eagles, every year it seems like they're one of the hottest teams when it comes to off-season topics, off-season stories. So today I'm going to be going over a lot of these coaching suggestions, a lot of the names that are coming up for interviews, and what I think is going to happen with these names. I mean, I'm going to go over the names. I'm going to tell you guys, you know, my personal thoughts about them, which ones I'd like to see the Eagles get, and which ones I think the Eagles might actually get, which is probably more important, because we can all, you know, hope that Bill Belichick leaves the Patriots and comes to Philadelphia, but it's not going to happen. So at the end of the day, I think it's more important to be realistic about who I think is actually going to take the Eagles' job, because the Eagles, I don't really think that the Eagles are the hottest destination right now. I think that that's something that Eagles fans are going to have to, you know, and I think the Eagles organization knows this as well, because in the press conference with Jeffrey Lurie and Howie Roseman, they essentially said as much. They said that, you know, one of the quotes from it was something, and I'm paraphrasing, but obviously it was something to the effect of they're not too concerned if the top candidates are off the board and they still haven't found a coach, which is, you know, there's some truth to that. When they hired Doug Peterson, he wasn't the big name coming out. Nobody even thought he was a head coaching candidate this early in his career. I mean, for the most part, I don't even think that he was seriously considered something that would be a viable option. I mean, I think the Eagles were the only team to really interview him. So they obviously struck gold with that, even though a couple years later he only had the job for 5 years and was fired. He did win a Super Bowl in those 5 years, and he did go to the playoffs 3 years in a row. So that was obviously a good hire, no matter how it ended. But at the end of the day, there is some truth to that. If they don't get whoever the top coaching candidates are, because the top coaching candidates that year were guys like Adam Gase, which obviously everybody was wrong about. I mean, this is a guy, Adam Gase got a lot of credit for things that obviously had nothing to do with him. Like, I think one of the big things was him working with Peyton Manning in Denver, if I remember that correctly. So Adam Gase obviously was smoke and mirrors. That was obviously more about who he was with than the actual job he was doing, and I think he proved that. But like I said, there's some truth to that. So if they don't get, you know, the big name, like let's say probably one of the top names coming out of college right now, there's a couple of big names that the Eagles are looking at, like Lincoln Riley, is one of the hot names for a couple years now in the NFL. Another one would be, out of the college ranks, once again, Ryan Day, from Ohio State. So there's definitely, some big names that Eagles fans might be attaching themselves to. The same one, the offensive coordinator, Eric Bieniemy from the Chiefs, is a big name that's been going around quite a bit, although I haven't actually seen any connection to the Eagles with that yet. But regardless, whatever the big names are on your personal list or whatever name you've heard that you say, hey, that sounds good, it really doesn't matter at the end of the day, because the Eagles have done a good job of sniffing out talent in hard to find places, going all the way, especially under Jeffrey Lurie's tenure. Speaking of Andy Reid being one of them, finding the guy who was just the quarterback's coach back when Jeffrey Lurie decided to make Andy Reid the head coach from the Packers quarterback coach. As far as I'm concerned, that was actually kind of ahead of the curve. I don't really think that was something that was too, I think typically back then it was mostly coordinators that were getting head coaching jobs. You typically work your way up to a coordinator job, you prove yourself as a coordinator, and then boom, you move on to head coaching. You know what I mean? It was not something typically back in the day, especially when Jeffrey Lurie decided to make that move. I don't remember a lot of position coaches jumping ahead like that. So that was a bold move. And the Eagles don't, they don't fear to make bold moves. Now, the last time they did get one of the hot names, one of the hot coaching candidates, it turned out to be Chip Kelly. That was one of the hottest names for an NFL job for a long time. You know, it doesn't really, you know, these things go to prove that. A couple things. I mean, for one, I think that one of the reasons that all these names have had success is because I think the Eagles organization, as much as Eagles fans don't like to admit it, are a pretty well-run organization. I think that's something to be said about that. The fact that since Jeffrey Lurie's been here, and I think the first coach he hired was Ray Rhodes, they've been pretty much a 9-7, 10-6, or better football team consistently from then on till now, with a few obvious bad years that cost head coaches jobs. But ultimately, this has been a successful franchise under Jeffrey Lurie. And I think that that's the reason that Jeffrey Lurie is taking the approach that he's taking, where it's more important to have stability in the front office than it is the coaching staff. And it's more important that the people in the front office are making choices rather than the coaching staff, because we saw how that went awry when he gave Chip Kelly the power that he gave Chip Kelly. And obviously, he blew the roster up. And I think that he doesn't want to do that again. I don't think he wants to make that mistake where he's giving. I mean, he did give that power to Andy Reid, but Andy Reid I think he might have earned it a little bit more. The guy was, I mean, obviously he's a better, you know, compared to the other coaches I've named. Andy Reid's probably the best one. He's looking like an all-time great coach at this point. I mean, he's definitely a Hall of Famer. He just won his first Super Bowl. He's done a lot of things that, you know, few other head coaches have done. So maybe he recognized that type of potential, and that's why he gave Andy Reid all that power. But at the end of the day, it doesn't look like he really wants to do that anymore. So whatever coach he brings in, I feel like there's certain parameters that this new head coach hire is going to have to know and he's going to have to be down with. And I think that's going to, that's going to basically, when I go over these coaching names that I show you guys here, that I talk about here, that's basically going to kind of, you know, dictate who the next coach is, who's willing to play ball in the way that they want this, you know, head coach to play ball, and the way that that Doug wouldn't, and essentially got him fired for the fact that he would stand up for himself, that he would stand up for, you know, his coaching staff members, things like that, put him in hot water more than the record, more than other things. One of the most interesting things is, speaking of which, you know, Doug Peterson, there was a big rumor that came out today. That one of the reasons that Doug and Jeffrey Lurie kind of had a falling out and really didn't see eye to eye is because Doug Peterson was pushing to move forward with Jalen Hurts as a starting quarterback. Now, I don't know what to make of these stories. I do believe, and I've talked about this at length on this podcast, about one of the major issues being that Doug Peterson saw his coaching staff one way and the ownership saw it a different way. And I mentioned this at length. I think the reality was that they wanted Doug to give up play calling duties. They wanted to bring in an offensive coordinator that was basically Doug's replacement in waiting. And Doug really didn't want to do that. So I do think that probably was a bigger reason because if they, you know, they basically looked at it like, look, if Doug's going to be an issue and they're bringing somebody to take over the offense anyway, and then they're going to bring in a coordinator to handle the defense the same way they did Jim Schwartz, then what is Doug really even doing here anymore? Other than just being a, you know, an overseer, which they feel like they have enough of in the building, I'm sure, because you can see how much this ownership team has meddled. In you know, they wouldn't even let Doug hire the coaches of his preference, you know, going into this year. They made him fire his offensive coordinator last year, and I'm sure he didn't want to do that again. So that I 100% believe. But do I believe necessarily that another big concern was that Doug was just completely out on Carson Wentz and he couldn't move forward with Carson Wentz, and that would be a reason for him to get fired? Because you saw him in press conferences throughout the week and throughout the season saying he had nothing but faith in Carson Wentz and yada, yada, yada. And I know there's such things as coach speak, and I know that at the end of the day, all this stuff could be tied into trying to keep Carson Wentz's value high, which is a possibility. Like I said, I mean, obviously, the way that you know, this has turned out, a lot of people are probably looking at this scenario now that Doug Peterson's gone, because you can really look at this situation two different ways. You can look at it like it's Doug's fault or it's Carson's fault that they were playing so poorly on offense. There's no other ways about it. You can blame Howie for the whole thing being a mess, even though obviously Jeffrey Lurie doesn't, because he's still here. But when it comes to just the offense, you got to look at one of two guys and say, that's who I'm blaming it on, Doug or Carson. And Doug being fired makes it seem as if they blamed it on Doug, where up to now, we all kind of thought that the writing was on the wall, that they were going to start over Jalen Hurts and that Carson Wentz was going to be gone. Now that Doug Peterson got fired, it's almost done a complete 180, and we really don't know if Carson's job is safe or not. We're thinking that it is based off of the fact that Doug is gone, and you know, that was one of the prevailing theories, is maybe you just bring in a better offensive-minded, you know, coach, a more forward-thinking coach, maybe a college coach, since a lot of offenses are going the way of you know, college offenses. It's really a predominant look. Maybe that's the way that they go, or just bring in somebody that can fix Carson Wentz, which there's a lot of coaching candidates I'm going to go over in this you know, in this podcast, that have a somewhat similar reputation to that. But some of them could be the next Adam Gase, because like I said, a lot of people thought that just because Adam Gase could help Peyton Manning have success, like how Peyton Manning has success everywhere he went, of course he's going to look good working with that guy. I could be Peyton Manning's coach, and I'd look like a, you know, like I know what I'm talking about. Anybody could be, because he's Peyton Manning. He was his own coach at the end of the day. He really didn't need one. So, I mean, we're going to, you know, there's lots of guys on this list. I'm going to tell you which ones I think could be the next Adam Gase, and which ones I think could be the next Chip Kelly, and which ones I think could actually be a good coach. Not that I have the answers more than anybody else, but these are just my thoughts on it. So, a very interesting twist. The first guy on the list, And this is one that's getting a lot of buzz right now. Like I said, the guy out of college, hot young coaching candidate out of college, similar to what Chip Kelly, is Lincoln Riley. I don't want to make every comparison of a college coach coming out that they're the next Chip Kelly. That's not my attempt at all, because we've seen a lot of college coaches come to the NFL and have a lot of success. Football's football. It's not like, we've seen people go from the NFL to college and have success. I mean, football's football at the end of the day. So I'm not trying to say that I think that Lincoln Riley is by any means a comparison to Chip Kelly. But as far as the hot coaching prospect coming out of college that lots of people have wanted for many years, Lincoln Riley definitely fits the bill. And I bring him up first, not because I think that there are rumors that he's the number one candidate on their board. And there's definitely a lot of, when I talk about quarterback whisperers on my list, he's probably number one, because he's had success with three different college quarterbacks to a Heisman level, a Heisman winning level. First of all, I mean, he totally, Baker Mayfield's had an up and down NFL career, but he's showing right now that with good coaching, that he can be a very good quarterback. He's still playing at the time of this podcast. So he had success with him, and he was not a guy. I mean, Baker Mayfield, when you look at his story, he's not a guy. He wasn't a highly recruited guy. He was a walk-on, from my understanding. So here's a guy that, he weighs 6 foot. He's not really the type of physical attributes anybody would want in their quarterback, and Lincoln Riley put him on the map and made him the number one pick in the draft, and a Heisman winner. So that is, that's massive right there. I mean, to be able to do that with, he's having success now, so obviously the guy's talented, but the appearance of that is he's almost like he took like an average Joe and turned him into a superhero, which is what everybody wants their quarterback to be, especially if you're trying to fix Carson Wentz, which looks like the prevailing theory. But the second quarterback was Kyler Murray, obviously much more gifted physically. Guy could have been he could be a professional baseball player right now if he had chosen to do that. So there's two guys back-to-back Heisman winners, and then this is the most interesting one. He brings Jalen Hurts over from Oklahoma, has him for 1 year, and he's the Heisman runner-up. He was second in the Heisman voting. Now, obviously, Jalen Hurts is now in Philadelphia. So if you're going to try to bring in a guy like Lincoln Riley, if that were to work out, then we still don't have any answers as far as the quarterback controversy, because if the Eagles really want to bring in Lincoln Riley because he's a quarterback whisperer and they think that he can fix Carson Wentz, it's really odd that they also bring in the guy who obviously has a really good working relationship with Jalen Hurts. If he was willing to pull strings to bring him over from Alabama to make him his starting quarterback. So there's obviously a familiarity there that might be purely coincidental. But I can understand why the Eagles and the quarterback factory would want a guy like Lincoln Riley, considering that he is a one-man quarterback factory. So it's a win-win. I mean, I'm very intrigued by the Lincoln Riley, possibility, which, there's a lot of rumors swirling about that. The fact that Lincoln Riley hasn't committed to Oklahoma yet. They make it sound like he's really mulling it over. And they also paint a picture that he's got a good relationship with Howie Roseman, which, like I said, all this stuff, who knows? I mean, maybe he's pulling a power play where he's trying to get as much, power before he comes into the league as possible, which a lot of people do. But, it's really hard to say. But it's a very interesting wrinkle. If he were to get hired, everybody would be wondering, because it's already on everybody's mind, is the future Carson Wentz's, or is it Jalen Hurts' future in Philadelphia? Whose team is it going to be? And if he's hired, it really doesn't give any answers to that. There's a couple of coaching candidates that if they did hire, I could say that that's probably pointing towards Wentz. And there's a couple of coaches that if they did hire, I mean, there's very interesting coaches. Like if they hired Ryan Day, I don't think that, there's a very slim chance that the Eagles could be looking at a quarterback. But if they hire Ryan Day out of Ohio State, maybe he pushes to try to get the Eagles to draft Justin Fields, if that's a possibility. I don't know if it's a possibility at 6. I don't know if he could try to, get them to trade and move up in the draft to try to, land his quarterback from college. That sounds really flimsy, but that's just another idea that could be in the works. Because I'm not completely sold on either the quarterbacks that they have. It wouldn't surprise me if they, if they did decide to scrap Wentz and draft another quarterback to compete with Jalen Hurts, because Jalen Hurts hasn't done enough to suggest that he has a airtight lockdown job, quarterback job right now, to be that he's the quarterback, franchise quarterback of the future. He hasn't done enough to suggest that. I really like Jalen Hurts. I think that the Eagles are in a unique position where they have two potential franchise quarterbacks. And whenever you talk to somebody or whenever you hear, what goes into, you know, head coaches that have their pick of organizations, you know, hot candidates like a Lincoln Riley who might have their choice between several head coaching jobs. What is one of the biggest deciding factors when going to a team? And one of them is usually one of the top ones is the quarterback. What do they have a quarterback? If you have a team where they're looking for a head coach and they have Tom Brady in their prime, they know that they're going to have a much easier path to winning, and that's going to keep their job security is going to be much better, because winning is what keeps you in work in coaching. So if you got, you know, Peyton Manning in his prime, obviously we saw, like I said, what that did for Adam Gase. It made him look like a competent, you know, offensive mind or a competent head coaching possibility, even though it was obviously wasn't true. So anytime, that's one of the biggest things. Anytime a guy's looking for a job and he's offered his choice, he's going to probably pick the one with the best quarterback situation. And the Eagles don't necessarily have the best quarterback situation. They have a muddled one, but they do have a unique situation where it's all, you know, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. So if, you know, Lincoln Riley or whoever looks at this situation and says, well, I actually really like this guy, I actually really like Carson Wentz, or I actually really like Jalen Hurts, or I actually really think that, you know, one of those two guys will work out. I mean, they're in a unique situation where there's some play there. Whoever they talk to be a head coaching candidate is going to have their own, you know, feelings about a guy. They're going to say, well, I really like what I saw out of this guy. And Lincoln Riley has a lot more of a background with Jalen Hurts. So maybe, you know, like I said, once again, I don't know what's true when it comes to the story that Doug Peterson wanted to move on with Jalen Hurts and get rid of Carson Wentz, and that was one of the issues. What if Lincoln Riley feels the same way? What if Lincoln Riley's like, man, let me tell you, when I was with this guy his last year, I thought I saw the next Russell Wilson, you know, and he feels the same way. Then if he comes here, is that going to further push Carson Wentz out the door? Or the Eagles organization that steadfast that they feel like, look, we want to fix Carson Wentz. We're kind of tits deep in this money wise. We need you to come bail us out and turn him into a franchise quarterback again. So there's a couple different ways to look at it. Maybe that's why Lincoln Riley's apprehensive. We don't know what's going on in these conversations behind the scenes. We don't know, why a guy might be hesitant to come here. But like I said, I mean, there's definitely a lot of red flags in the Eagles organization. There's definitely a lot of red flags that if I was a head coaching candidate, I would look at and say, I don't know if I want to go there because of that. And I'm not just talking about the horrible salary cap situation, the overbearing owner, the meddlesome GM. These are all really big red flags. You have to have you have to have something ironed out pretty clad to come take a job here. But worse situations have gotten coaches. You know, the Cowboys consistently find coaches and good coaching candidates, and they just brought in Dan Smith as their defensive coordinator, which is an excellent hire. Obviously, I mean, they bring in a lot of good coaches, to be honest with you. The Redskins, I mean, or I can't call them the Redskins. I made that mistake. I'm not going to edit out. The Washington football team. Dan Snyder has been a horrible owner, one of the worst owners in the league, one of the most overbearing, meddlesome owners in the league over the last couple of decades. And they've constantly, I mean, they have scandals out the wazoo. That organization is horribly run. But guess what? They still keep finding coaching candidates, and they brought in Ron Rivera, an excellent head coaching candidate right there. So there's still, you know, guys will still take jobs, mostly because a head coaching job, there's only 32 of them in the league, and that's the end of the line. If you're a coach, if you're a great coach, head coaching is the end of the line. There's no bigger job other than that. Maybe after you retire, you can move up into the executive branch or the front office jobs and all that stuff. But as a coach, that's as high as it gets. And if you want to run your program, that's typically the way to do it. Although the Eagles have shown otherwise, they have shown that just because you're the head coach doesn't mean you get to call the shots. As you saw how they undercut Doug every path after every path, they just said, you know what? Yeah, we know that you just said you love your coaches, but you're going to fire them today. We know that you like this player and that player, but it doesn't matter because Howie Roseman is going to call the shots and mess up draft picks. They've shown, you know, every which way, even on game day rosters. You know, it's even going as far as, all right, well, I know you like this new kid, Travis Fulgham, who just caught 10 balls against the number one defense in the league against the Pittsburgh Steelers, but we're going to need you when Alshon Jeffrey's healthy to put him out there anyway, even if he can't play. So we've seen all those red flags, and I'm sure that the potential coaches around the league have seen all those red flags, and I'm sure they'd want to clear some of that up before they agreed to take the job that is this mess of a Philadelphia Eagles. Like I said, I mean, not only that, but one of the biggest red flags is probably the fact that they just fired their head coach, who was only here for 5 years and had a ton of success, a Super Bowl championship. I heard the other day that only one coach in the Super Bowl era has been fired after winning a Super Bowl championship within the first 5 years or 3 years. They didn't actually elaborate on who that was. I would think maybe it was Jimmy Johnson. Maybe that was the one, because they had a falling out between the coach and the owner, and that was a very unceremonious, that was a huge public mess, kind of like the Eagles. And I've been constantly making this comparison of Jeffrey Lurie to kind of turning into a Jerry Jones type of owner in previous podcasts, that I think he's a meddlesome owner and he doesn't get enough vitriol for it. And I think that if that's the only other Super Bowl winning head coach that got fired, then there's another comparison you can make between the Eagles, obviously being a mess of a front office and a mess of a team. Why would somebody want to come step into this mess? Because you just fired a Super Bowl winning head coach within a 5 year window. It's really 3 years since he won the Super Bowl. What makes any head coach coming in here think that he has job stability? And that's something that, I mean, you know, that's something that, that was one of the main reasons I really didn't think the Eagles would fire Doug Peterson, is because they don't want to look like those horrible franchises that are constantly turning over coaches. I mean, look at the Steelers. They're the model of consistency. They're the one of the models of winning, and they've only had two coaches in like the last 30 years or so. Like they've been ridiculously consistent. It was just Bill Cowher. It was Chuck Knoll, then Bill Cowher, and now we got Mike Tomlin. And even Mike Tomlin last year's name was coming up as a possible hot seat candidate. He probably did his best coaching job last year. And I think that the Eagles, if they would have took that model and would have stuck with Andy Reid, I think eventually Andy Reid would have turned it around and would have won a Super Bowl kind of Bill Cowher-esque. I think he would have eventually kind of, worked his way into a Super Bowl with the Eagles after like 20 years, kind of like Bill Cowher did. You know what I mean? But they moved on from, so it is what it is. So, like I said, before this podcast gets too old, I would like to get into some of these head coaching candidates. Like I said, I was going to. I only really discussed Lincoln Riley. There's a couple of, I already discussed Ryan Day. I don't really know what to feel about him. I mean, I feel like I like coaches that make names for themselves, not coaches that go to programs that already have a huge, they ascend to a job of a big school that already has a name for itself. And I feel like, a guy that takes over Ohio State, they already have such a grand tradition. I don't know if he's going to be, the next Barry Switzer or the next Jimmy Johnson. You know what I mean? Like, he could just be a guy that takes over for a great program, and that program just kept rolling while he was there. So that's kind of my thought on that, but, I could be wrong. But, I mean, it's an interesting name. One of the names that I really like, another college name, is Joe Brady. Joe Brady was the offensive coordinator, or the passing game coordinator, I think is the more appropriate term. I don't think it was the actual offensive coordinator in college for LSU, but when Joe Burrow had that monster year and broke every college record, and that offense had a monster year and broke every college record, a lot of people were pointing at Joe Brady and saying that he was a major reason for that. He came up with the Panthers this year. He took the offensive coordinator job. This is an interesting candidate because, number one, he's never had a head coaching job as far as I know. So for the Eagles to take him from the offensive coordinator of the Panthers to the head coach of the Eagles, that would be his first head coaching job, and he's going to take over a head coaching job of an NFL franchise, which sounds like a bit of a jump. It sounds like a jump to go from college, not even an offensive coordinator in college, to NFL offensive coordinator. Because like I said, I think it was the passing game coordinator, if I'm not correct. So that's a huge jump in itself. And then a year later, after the Panthers didn't really do a bunch, or didn't do a ton of, a ton to really make a name for himself, to go straight to an NFL, head coach. But I mean, he's interviewed, he's a hot prospect. He's interviewed just about every opening that there is, from what I hear, my understanding of the situation. So if the Eagles don't take him, it sounds like somebody else will regardless. And he sounds like one of the hottest names on the circuit. And I know me personally, like I said, I mean, if you look at the Carolina Panthers, their offense didn't really produce last year. I think that you could kind of point to Teddy Bridgewater. He's a good quarterback. He's kind of an okay quarterback. Let's just put him that way. I can't really say that Teddy Bridgewater, he's not what the doctor ordered. If you want an explosive, high-powered offense, I don't think he's really the guy. But if you look at their individual skill position players, you can make a case that he basically came to that team. I know they lost Christian McCaffrey for most of the year, although Christian McCaffrey had 5 touchdowns in 2.5 games before getting injured. But ultimately, every single skill position player on that roster, all 3 of their main receivers, and even Teddy Bridgewater and the running back that replaced Christian McCaffrey, all had career years in one form or another, which, Robbie Anderson broke 1,000 yards receiving for the first time in his career. He came over from the Jets. And he also caught 95 balls, I think, which was like 32 more balls than his previous career high. Then you have DJ Moore, who was drafted there 3 years ago, he had, I think, his highest average per catch. He had like 18 and a half per catch, although the rest of his stats looked somewhat similar. He had similar yards, lower catch total, obviously, but he became a more explosive player, which is something that he, you know, could obviously do. And then Curtis Samuel, their slot receiver, who was kind of viewed as more of like a gadget guy, came out of nowhere and had a monster year. I think he had 900 yards or close to 900 yards receiving, which, like I said, the guy was kind of viewed as like a gadget guy, a return specialist, a guy you just give, you know, sweeps and end arounds to and stuff like that. And that guy, when I hear that, I think of, you know, what could this guy do with Jalen Reagor, who's supposed to be in that mold? Can he really, you know, can he really can he get something out of Jalen Reagor similar to that fashion, similar to that vein, maybe a year or two down the line? And then, like I said, they're obviously their running back. I mean, Teddy Bridgewater had the most passing yards of his career, but it wasn't by a lot. And then Mike Davis kind of came out of nowhere and had a monster year for them as a backup running back. I mean, I can only imagine what Christian McCaffrey would have done over a full season. If he scored 5 touchdowns in a little over 2 games, I'm not saying you could average that out for the season, but you could easily say that he probably would have led the league in touchdowns at that pace. So there's no doubt that, you know, the guy's offense, if he had a quarterback with a little bit more, you know, a little bit more ability than Teddy Bridgewater, I think that the offense would have shown out more. But he's definitely one of my favorite candidates. If I was to look at one of these candidates, I mean, I would look at Lincoln Riley and say, you know, if I want somebody that can fix my quarterback situation, he'd be the first guy I look at. And if there's a guy that I look at and say, if he could fix my offense, I would look at Joe Brady. I think out of all these guys, those are probably my two. They definitely have the most sizzle. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if they have the meat and potatoes, but they definitely have the most sizzle to them. I don't know how else to put it. But those are the guys where you're swinging for the fences if you get one of those guys. You might, you know, Lincoln Riley might come in and turn Carson Wentz back into an Aaron Rodgers clone, which is kind of what he looked like his first year, you know, a playmaking MVP caliber quarterback, and Joe Brady might come in and he might, you know, spark a fire under some of these underachieving receivers and find ways to scheme them open and stuff like that. I mean, that'd be, if you could get that, your offense, your head coach, I know it's not possible, but if in some alternate reality, if Lincoln Riley was your head coach or your quarterback's coach and Joe Brady was your offensive coordinator or whatever, I mean, that would just be outstanding. But like I said, obviously those things aren't possible. So we're trying to stay within the realm of that. Another one, I mean, there's a lot of defensive names coming up, and I wonder how many of these guys are actually like Jared Mayo, who was I think he was a Pro Bowl player for the Patriots. He's the linebackers coach right now. I remember he was a great player, but he's obviously, anybody in the Belichick tree typically gets, you know, there's just, I mean, when you saw what Brian Flores did in Miami, who I think was also the linebackers coach, anybody under Bill Belichick, especially on the defensive side, you know, you got to think that there's, I don't know. I have issues. I mean, I really like Brian Flores. There's no doubt that guy went and completely flipped around the Dolphins and whipped them into shape. They're looking like a program of the future. But as far as the majority of the guys that have come under the Belichick tree, I can't say there's been a lot that have really gone on to have their own success. And especially on the defensive side, because like I said, Belichick's a defensive guy. So I always kind of wonder, like, well, how much of that is going to rub off on these other guys, or how much of that is just Bill Belichick being the greatest coach of all time? So I'm a little bit leery about that, but I don't know if that's something. I mean, are they possibly interviewing him to come in and just run the defense? You know what I mean? That's the thing. Like, you hear he's being interviewed, but I haven't heard specifics that he's being interviewed for head coach. If he's being interviewed, a lot of these guys might be being interviewed for defensive coordinator, perhaps. I mean, that would be the only thing that I could really say. I would definitely be interested in, I guess, in Mayo as a possible defensive coordinator. That would make some sense. Todd Bowles is another defensive guy. My whole theory on defensive coordinators and defensive head coach potential guys, I also like Todd Bowles. I remember the Eagles had Todd Bowles. They actually brought him in a couple years ago when they had Juan Castillo as the defensive coordinator. That herald move where they moved an offensive line coach, a career-long offensive line coach, to the defensive coordinator because they just couldn't get anybody to sign on to basically have a one-year job because the entire league knew that Andy Reid was almost out the door. They brought Todd Bowles in, and I think a lot of people I know, I thought that they were going to bring him in to basically replace Juan Castillo the second he got fired. And I think that's how it happened. I don't necessarily remember the exacts, but I think that he was basically, I mean, he was a guy that there was a lot of talk about him being a head coaching candidate even back then. But like I said, overall, when it comes to defensive minds and defensive potential head coaches, I'm not really for that. I don't think that that's the prevailing theory anymore in the NFL. It's not a defense run league, in my opinion. It's mostly an offensive run league now, or at least that's how it's trending. I'm not sure if it's there 100% yet, because there's still a lot of great defensive minded head coaches in the league, obviously. But I feel like people that really want to bring in that offensive mind and keep them here, that they can't lose. And I think that's kind of the Eagles' theory, what they want to try to do. You have to give them the head coaching job, because if you bring in, say you bring in one of these defensive guys and they become the head coach, another guy like I also really like, which once again, he falls in the same category, which is Robert Saleh. I'm not sure how you say his name, but he's another guy. Really like him. Wouldn't mind him running the program. But he's a guy that if you have him here, and say you do get a guy, say some, you know, weird scenario happens where they bring in some really hot offensive mind like Lincoln Riley for the offensive coordinator, even though it's obviously not the idea. But say he comes in as an offensive coordinator and he's got the offense just flowing. You know what I'm saying? The offense is kicking butt. They're putting up 40 a game. What's going to happen? Somebody's going to snatch him from you. So that's something that you basically have to solidify these guys in the position of head coach to keep them there. That's typically how it goes. And you might be seeing that in Buffalo, another head coaching candidate on the Eagles list that I like to an extent. And that's Brian Daboll. Here's another guy. I mean, once again, somebody that's getting credit for really, I don't know if fixing's the word, because he kind of just grew Josh Allen. I mean, he was there, as long as Josh Allen was there. Obviously, Josh Allen's first year wasn't the best, and he kind of, he basically grew him into one of the best quarterbacks in the league. So he's getting a lot of credit for it. But we don't know if that's necessarily true. That might just be Josh Allen's natural talent showing through. He's another guy who could be the next Adam Gase. And he's another guy that maybe if he leaves, maybe he was the reason that, maybe Josh Allen falls apart once he leaves. I know that Josh Allen's success boils down a little bit more to organizational success, putting talent around him than necessarily. This is another reason I'm not a huge guy on the Brian Daboll bus as far as head coach of the Eagles, is because I feel like organizationally, they didn't fail Josh Allen the same way the Eagles failed Carson Wentz. The Bills, at the very least, I mean, they invested in the Lions pretty much, which the Eagles also did. But one thing that they did do better than the Eagles was they invested in the receiver position, which is obviously more important for a young quarterback. Getting these guys open is important. So since he's been there, since Josh Allen has been there, I mean, they went out and got one of the best slot receivers in the league, and Cole Beasley. That was one of the first moves. Then they signed John Brown, a guy that could stretch the field, stretch defenses. And then this last year, they kicked it up an entire notch by trading for Stephon Diggs, who went and had the best, pretty much the best year of any receiver in the league, had the most catches. He just basically, that trio right there is up there when it comes to receiving cores as there is in the league. There's not a ton of receiving cores that you can point at and say are definitively better. They might have the best receiving core in the league. It's definitely up there. There's definitely a lot of talent there, which is the bottom line. And there's a lot of speed. They definitely have one of the faster receiving cores. So they didn't fail Josh Allen. I don't look at this situation and say, I'm pretty sure Brian Daboll is the guy that did that. The same way that there's a track record to point to guys like Lincoln Riley, that he's more responsible for his success of his quarterbacks. I mean, it's just one case, and I don't want to give that guy the reins to the team based off of Josh Allen's success when it could be Josh Allen. That's the reason he's successful. We hear stories about Josh Allen definitely putting in the work. That's the bottom line. Couple of very interesting in-division ones. First of all, staying at home, Deuce Staley for the Eagles. Now, this one here, I don't know what to think about this. I've never... Deuce Staley, it's hard to tell if the guy... I'm never really a fan of promoting a guy from a bad situation in-house. I mean, it's not like... You know, if the Eagles were 4-11-1 or whatever the record was, and the running game was pretty good. That's probably a bad example. Let's say that the defense was number one and the offense was last. That would be a scenario where you could definitely say, okay, well, we should promote the defensive coordinator because he obviously got his stuff together. But being that Deuce Staley was part of the latter, which is the offense was terrible, it really gives me pause to say that, well, I don't know if we should just – if the offense was so bad and he was a part of it. Obviously, the running game was very good. That's the thing. They just didn't run the ball enough. But they had one of the highest averages in the league for most of the season. I don't know how it ended. And obviously, Miles Sanders, he brought Miles Sanders along very well. But once again, I mean, if you're going to make him the head coach, I'd feel more confident if they made him the full offensive coordinator. I think that would be a better move, similar to Eric Bieniemy, because once again, I mean, I don't know what he is. I'm not there in the building, but I do feel like the prevailing theory is we want to bring guys from the outside to fix these issues because the guys in-house couldn't get it done. So I don't see how you would just, you know, hand the keys to the car over to Deuce Staley, considering he was a part of the mess. Another one is Kellen Moore, the offensive coordinator for the Cowboys. And I got to be honest, the Cowboys have been a very good offense over the last 2 years. Last year, obviously, was they had a lot of injuries, similar to the Eagles. They lost their quarterback, but even there, I feel like they kind of put that back together and did a decent job. And they made a run at the playoffs all the way to the last week. I don't know. I really want to stay away from Cowboys players as a whole. As if I'm part of the Eagles organization, it hasn't really worked out. Every time the Eagles have, I mean, it just seems like two different worlds. The Cowboys are like, they're almost like a Hollywood brand team, like L.A. or, you know, they're kind of like the Western version of, like, they're like a West Hollywood, where the Eagles are more of a blue collar, your lunch pay, all the sayings, whatever. That's kind of what the Eagles are. They're more of a blue collar area, and I don't know if those styles would mesh, and maybe that's why it's never really worked out like that. That's pretty much how I feel about those two candidates. I'm cool with them interviewing them, and I think Deuce Staley would he'd be a better offensive coordinator, but that's another thing. I mean, whoever they bring is going to want to bring in their own guys, which is something that could all be being worked out behind the scenes. We don't know what's being worked out behind the scenes. That's the bottom line. I'm sure these things are getting kicked around. I'm sure there's advanced discussions going on right now. Urban Meyer's already been hired by the Jaguars. I mean, guys are coming off the board already. This is something that, the Eagles have to get a move on. They have to figure out these specifics and bring in somebody. Like I said, ultimately, if I were to look at all the names that I've listed, and I'll read them off, I feel pretty confident and pretty comfortable about all of them. Like, I would take any one of them and be pretty happy. But some I feel more confident with than others. Like, to me, the real blue chip ones that I'd be most excited about would be Lincoln Riley, because once again, his ability to what he does with quarterbacks. Joe Brady, once again, because I think he has the ability. I mean, he comes from the Saints tree, from the Sean Payton tree. So I think that he would get this offense going. Those would probably be my two top guys. After that, I'd probably have guys like Brian Daboll and Robert Saleh. Because they come from successful organizations. And I think that what the Eagles need is they need somebody that, they just need somebody a little bit more stern, a little less friendly than Doug. I think Doug, I just think he didn't have his troops ready. Like, everybody always says they love playing for Doug and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, Doug wasn't, he wasn't hard enough on his guys sometimes. I don't think he had any fear. And I think you could get that from a guy like, I don't know, I think Robert Saleh might be a little bit more of a, he might be a little bit more stern. I got Brian Daboll there because, like I said, ultimately I really feel like an offensive coach makes more sense. I'd rather them bring in an offensive coach than a defensive coach for a head coaching job. So in that same vein, I almost feel like Kellen Moore, I'd probably have him in that second tier, even though I'm not really huge about bringing in a guy from Dallas. A guy like Todd Bowles I'd probably have next, who I really love as a defensive coordinator. He's a really good defensive coach. But once again, I'm going offense first. Out of all these candidates, I probably pretty much have all the offensive guys at the top. And then for some reason, I'm discounting Deuce Staley just because I just don't know. I mean, I wouldn't mind Deuce. Don't get me wrong. Like, I wouldn't be upset about it, but I just feel like I really want somebody. I want the appearance that somebody's going to come from somewhere else and come fix this problem. And I'm not going to feel that way if it's a guy who was here the whole time while the problem's going on. So that's something that, that's part of the whole reason where I've been of the opinion of just like rip this whole thing down and start over. And it's just been half measure after half measure after half measure, where all they've really gotten rid of is Doug Peterson. And I don't feel like replacing him with Deuce Staley, who's been here even longer, if I'm correct in saying that. I think Deuce has been here before Doug. That's something that I don't see how that's really fixing the issue. I feel like this is an organizational issue, and I'd want to bring in somebody who's going to bring his own you know, tools for the job. I feel like I've been trying to chop a tree down with a golf club, and I'd rather a guy come in with an axe. You know what I mean? That's kind of how it feels. And I don't really feel like, you know, that's kind of how the Eagles are right now. I don't feel like they even have their head in the right place half the time to, you know, basically. I feel like, you know, I guess the bigger issue is whoever they hire doesn't really matter, because I don't even think that the biggest issue is Doug. I think the biggest issue, what it still is, and it might be the owner, but the biggest issue is how they're running the team. So whether you want to say it's Howie Roseman or Jeffrey Lurie, I think at that point, that's kind of, and like I said, I came to bat for Jeffrey Lurie at the beginning of this podcast. I said how, you know, they've been very successful since he's been here, and he's one of the better owners in the league, but he's, I think that he's missed the boat. I mean, people look at this organization and say that, you know, the Eagles, once they didn't learn how to be successful. Once they had success, they just got, you know, drunk off of it and just did a bad job. And I think you can point right at Jeffrey Lurie for that. So I'm going to go ahead and end this podcast, because I typically try to do about a half an hour pod. You know, this one's running a bit long, but that's fine. But I'm going to end this. So this has been episode 9. As I hear more stories, I'm hoping the next thing is the Eagles hire somebody, because it sounds like I said, Urban Meyer just went off, and I think he's the first guy to get hired since the offseason began for teams that didn't make the playoffs anyway. So like I said, you're going to start hearing coaches get hired, and once the Eagles do, I'm going to hop back on here and I'm going to give you guys my thoughts on it. Hopefully it's soon. But any other big news stories come out, I mean, I'm going to try to do a pod once or twice a week for people that are listening. So that's it. That's the pod. And this has been Philadelphia Eagles Talk episode 9. I'm your host, Kevin Woodman, and thanks for listening.